Good afternoon. This is Matt Woodbury, and I'll be bringing you the first half of the Pantograph News today from the edition dated Friday, June 8th. Let's get started with a story right on the first page titled, Usual Summer Weather Expected After Heat Wave. Weather experts say above normal rainfall possible this season. And this article is written by Julia Evil-Sizer. After the warmest May in Illinois history, weather experts predict the remaining summer forecast to stick to average temperatures. But that doesn't mean the heat is going anywhere the rest of this month. When you have temperatures this high, this early, you worry about that setting the tone for the rest of the summer, said Jim Angel, state climatologist. Regardless of the warm spring, the three-month summer, June, July, August, outlooks show equal chances for above normal or below normal temperatures for the season, said Angel. Daytime highs have remained steady in Illinois over the last few years. It's the nighttime lows that are creeping up on us. It's harder to cool off at night, which can cause stress to people and livestock trying to find relief from the heat, said Angel. Forecasts show June to be warmer than usual, according to Ernest Goetsch, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Lincoln. Goetsch said the average temperature should be around the low 80-degree mark, but most days in central Illinois have been creeping up into the upper 80s and low 90s. As for precipitation, officials said the state has a chance for above-normal rainfall this summer, despite current dry conditions. The largest drought monitor shows us approaching drought conditions in central Illinois, but it's nothing to be worried about yet, Goetsch said. Weekend weather in Bloomington Normal will remain hot, with highs in the middle to upper 80s. Rain and storms are expected in the north, said Goetsch, but the Pantograph area will still have a chance of scattered storms Saturday and Sunday. That chance of storms will continue into the first part of the week. As the heat continues, Bloomington and Normal have many spots to cool down. We get a lot of activity at our aquatic centers, Anderson and Fairview, pools in Normal. We have a really nice grassy area at Fairview Park where people can use the shade for cover. There's also shaded spots at Anderson Park for those who are not looking for sun, said James Wayne, Assistant Director of Business and Recreation Operations for the town of Normal. Wayne recommended Anderson, Underwood, and Fell Parks in Normal for a well-shaded spot to play, though the playground at Underwood is currently under construction. He added the Oak Street Baseball Field near Chittix Junior High School has been updated with new dugouts, fencing, field regrading, and Americans with Disabilities Act compliant accessibility. Definitely check out our pools and take advantage of the early morning hours in our local parks. Get out and be active when it's cooler so you don't have to worry about the direct overhead sun. In Bloomington, Jade Tetzloff, director of Bloomington Parks and Recreation and Cultural Arts Department, said the city pools, Miller Park, miniature golf, and zoo have been popular destinations. The Pepsi Ice Center is closed for maintenance, and the spray parks at Tipton and Miller Parks are receiving extra coats of slip-resistant paint. The splash pad at Tipton has reopened, and the Miller Park pad is expected to open by the weekend. A splash zone at McGraw Park is also available. The zoo is half inside and half outside, so it's a good place to get cooled off along with the pools, Holiday and O'Neill, said Tetzloff. And speaking of other facilities in Bloomington Normal, we've got another article that's titled Community Center to Add Space Services. Unity expanding into former Normal police substation next door. This one's written by Derek Bay. Bloomington Normal Kids will return to a new and improved Unity Community Center this fall. The center, a University of Illinois expansion project at 632 Orlando Avenue in Normal, is expected to get a commercial kitchen, more space for teen programming, and on-site supplemental nutrition assistance program services after expanding into the former National Police Department substation next door. After the substation closed because of town budget cuts this spring, we approached the landlord about taking over that space as well, and it was very doable, said Bobby Lewis Sibley, Extension Director for McLean, Livingston, and Woodford Counties. Hopefully, we can make a bigger impact than we're already doing. Extension's rent will rise from $54,050 per year to $71,675, still covered by town and State Farm grants, and the space will enable the center to offer new and more convenient summer programming services, said Lewis Sibley. We provide a meal 5 nights a week during the school year for about 50 students, and we have a food permit from the McLean County Health Department, but we only have microwaves. Now we'll have a stove, a range, and a commercial dishwasher, she said. We can use silverware and dishes and not paper and plastic, which will reduce our carbon footprint. The kitchen is expected also to help Extension's nutrition and wellness program, which doesn't currently have a commercial kitchen in the country. Extension also has an office at 1615 Commerce Parkway in Bloomington. I have an employee who works with schools with high incidences of free and reduced lunch through SNAP, and now that person will work out of the center. It's taking those employees who are working with the same audience and putting them together to have more seamless services, said Lewis Sibley. We're hoping to add a second person in the fall. She said the center will ask teens what additional programming they'd like to have in the space freed up in their area after some extension offices are relocated to the former substation. Officials hope to wrap up the other changes to the center before the 2018-2019 school year. We've already begun talking with the contractor about the kitchen, though the center can't use the space until July 1st, said Lewis Sibley. Unity starts first week of September, so we have a good 3 months to work on it. The center offers summer camp in addition to its regular programming, including tutoring, computer lab, civic engagement, enrichment classes, 4-H future leaders, master gardeners programming, Spanish lessons, music, and healthy living activities, according to its website. Normal city manager Pam Reese said she looks forward to seeing what the center will do with the additional space. The town this week approved the federal community development block grant money it gives the center. They're doing some exciting things and meeting needs, said Reese. And now another story about city facilities, this time out of Bloomington. This story titled Council to Hear Results of Study, Sports Facility Details to be Shared in July. This was written by Derek Bay. After years of debate among Bloomington Normal officials on the merits of a Twin City outdoor sports complex, a hired expert delivers its verdict next month. Sports Facilities Advisory, the Clearwater, Florida consultant getting $47,000 to study the subject this spring, is expected to present its results to a joint session of the Bloomington and Normal City Councils and the Bloomington Normal Convention and Visitors Bureau Board in July. Though the Town of Normal released a notice Wednesday for a meeting at 5 p.m. July 16th on the fourth floor at Uptown Station, details have not been decided, city and town officials said Thursday. We've booked this on our calendar just to be safe, but we still have some things to come before making this absolute date, said Normal City Manager Pam Reese. We're optimistic it will go forward on July 16th, said Nora Dukowitz, Communications Manager for the City of Bloomington. Printed summary of SFA's findings are expected to be made public at the same time as the presentation. Reese said Normal officials haven't discussed a possible complex much since commissioning the study in March. The town has been broadly supportive of a complex, but had issues getting Bloomington officials on board. Bloomington and Normal paid $17,625 each toward the study. CVB paid $11,750. Bloomington Ward 7 Alderman Scott Black, who has represented the city in talks about a complex, said he was pleased by SFA's attention to detail during a feedback session, but he still views a complex as a low priority, too low to add to the city's parks master plan, a first step toward completion. I would need to hear a reasonable cost and proven numbers to show the economic impact of such a complex will be more than the cost required from local governments, he said. We have more critical needs, like O'Neill Park, pool, and bringing more businesses into the community. Though a complex would likely include facilities for several sports, it also would solve a long-standing need to replace community fields, a soccer facility on Central Illinois Regional Airport land in Bloomington that officials want to vacate. Town officials have said they hope the complex will not only solve that problem, but be an economic development driver that brings in lucrative tournaments and associated sales and hotel tax revenue. We wanted to make sure they were looking at a broad spectrum of recreational and sports needs for the community, said Reese of her feedback sessions with SFA. We've spent time making sure they were thorough, engaging what their process considers. Illinois Fire Juniors and Prairie Cities Soccer League, two connected groups that frequently use community fields, are working to raise money for a replacement. Peoria developer, the Kim Group, is also working on the problem with a proposed $28 million facility on the community's west side. Turning to news at the national level, our next story is titled Tentative Immigration Deal Mold. A leader of House Republican moderates said Thursday that a tentative deal with conservatives is being discussed to help young Dreamer immigrants stay in the U.S. legally. It was unclear if the plan was a potential breakthrough in the GOP's long-running schism over immigration, or would devolve into another failed bid to bridge the gap. The proposal emerged the same day that House Speaker Paul Ryan, Republican from Wisconsin, said leaders will craft an attempt at compromise on the issue that Republicans could embrace. Ryan is hoping an accord will derail threats by GOP centrists to force a series of House votes on immigration soon that leaders say would be divisive and damage the party's electoral prospects in November. The flurry underscored the escalating pressure Republicans face to address immigration, an issue pitting centrists representing Hispanic and moderate voters against conservatives with deep red constituents sympathetic to President Donald Trump's anti-immigration outbursts. Painfully aware of those divisions, leaders had seemed happy to sidestep the issue until the moderates' rebellion forced their hand. Representative Jeff Denham, Republican of California, said that under an offer from the hard right House Freedom Caucus, young immigrants brought illegally to the U.S. as children could get a new visa that would let them stay in the country for 8 years. He expressed uncertainty over what would happen after that, but said participants have characterized the proposal as a bridge to the legal immigration system, which suggests a pathway to remaining in the U.S. permanently. Representative Carlos Curbelo, a Republican of Florida, Denham's fellow moderate leader, said that while talks have focused on providing legal status to Dreamers, the proposal does not involve a special pathway nor a visa unique to any specific group. Conservatives have been adamant about not providing a special process carving out a unique way for Dreamers to gain legal status, and some of them bristled at Denham's narrower description. Later, the Freedom Caucus tweeted that the group has not made an offer, but is engaged in talks focused on the border security and the status of Dreamers. Denham, Curbelo, and other lawmakers said details of the proposal remained in flux and nothing's been finalized. This was their offer to us, and it's something we can agree to, but not until we see it on paper, Denham said. And now we'll turn to some state-level news. This article is titled, Changes to Illinois Pension Program to Take Time. This one is written by Doug Fink. It could be months before state pension plans are ready to accept people who want to be part of one of the buyout programs lawmakers approved as part of the budget agreement. The state's largest retirement system, the Teachers Retirement System, has posted some information about the pension revisions on its website. Implementation of these new laws will take time, the site says, near the top. No date for implementation has been given. We're working on it. We have to put in place as practically as possible, said TRS spokesman Dave Urbanek. It involves a lot of IT work. It involves a lot of legal study to make sure that the law as written can be implemented. The state retirement system handles pensions for state workers, lawmakers, and judges. Executive Director Tim Blair said he hopes the program can be operating well before the end of the year, which is when most people make a decision about retirement. We have a lot of work to do, and a lot of the details are being hammered out, Blair said. Ideally, I'd like to have it implemented yesterday because it's good for the system. For everybody who does this, we're losing a little bit of liability and we're getting reimbursed on the payment side. There were three major components to the pension changes approved as part of the state budget deal, which Governor Bruce Rauner signed into law this week. One limits late career salary spiking to 3%. The other two components provide for buyouts from the pension plans. One is directed at people who are vested in one of the pension plans but are no longer active members. An example would be a state employee who worked for the state long enough to be vested in the state employee retirement system, but has since moved to a job out of government. The state would give those people who are eligible 60% of their present value of their vested pension benefit in exchange for them dropping out of the system. SRS estimates 4,000 people would be eligible, while TRS said about 20,000 people vested in its system would be eligible. The state expects to save $41 million. The other buyout plan would ask people as they plan to retire if they'd be willing to give up the 3% compounded annual increase in pension benefits that go to members of the Tier 1 system. The people who accept would see annual increases in their retirement benefit of 1.5%, not compounded. The state would calculate the difference in benefits a person would receive with the 3% annual increase and the 1.5% increase, and a person could get 70% of that amount placed in an alternative retirement vehicle. In both cases, the state will issue bonds to cover the cost of the buyouts. The budget assumes the state will save about $382 million from the second buyout program. The unfunded liability of the five pension plans is about $130 billion. Some have said the savings estimate is overly optimistic. However, Representative Mark Badenich, a Republican from Plainfield, who has promoted the buyout plans, thinks people will see advantages to the buyout. For example, he said because the annual raises compound, the greatest benefit happens to a retiree the older they get when they may be suffering from health problems. The idea of pulling that money forward while you can still enjoy it and do something with it, that alone is a pretty good reason to take the buyout, Badenich said. And now we'll turn to a little bit of criminal justice news. This story titled Woman Charged in Home Invasion and Attack. This one's written by Kevin Barlow. 32-year-old Saybrook woman has been charged with taking part in a home invasion and attack on a couple in Anchor early Monday morning. Jacqueline Jones is accused of home invasion, aggravated battery, and criminal trespass to a residence. She remains in McLean County Jail in lieu of posting $7,535 bond. A co-defendant, Derek Roche, 22, also of Saybrook, faces charges of home invasion, possession of methamphetamine, criminal trespass to property, unlawful use of a weapon, aggravated assault, and possession of cannabis. He remained jailed in lieu of posting $10,035. Both have arraignments scheduled for June 15th in McLean County Circuit Court. Jones was located and arrested in Hayworth Tuesday afternoon and formally charged on Wednesday. Prosecutors said the pair broke into a home in the 400 block of 2nd Street in Anchor around 4 a.m. Monday. Court documents indicate Roche was carrying a pistol and Jones had a crowbar when they arrived at the residence of a man who was dating Roche's former girlfriend. The victims told police there were several loud bangs on the door, and then Roche and Jones broke into the home. Prosecutors said Roche pointed the pistol at the man and then hit him, causing bruises and cuts on his leg and back. Jones is accused of attempting to choke Roche's former girlfriend, causing her to lose consciousness, according to the statement. After the attack, prosecutors said Roche and Jones left. McLean County Sheriff deputies found Roche asleep about an hour later at his residence in Saybrook. During the arrest, police reported they found methamphetamines and marijuana. In a little bit more cheerful news, this article is titled, Rogers Helps Red Cross Raise Record High $342,000. This one is written by Paul Schweich. The quarterback who led the Green Bay Packers to Super Bowl victory in 2011 has taken the American Red Cross serving Central Illinois to new fundraising and attendance records for its annual Evening of Stars. Red Cross announced Thursday that its 25th annual Evening of Stars featuring Aaron Rodgers as a keynote speaker raised a record-high $342,000 for Red Cross programs and services. That is the net amount after expenses, said Patrick Gavin, Red Cross Regional Chief Development Officer. More than 1,100 people attended the April 24th event at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center in Uptown Normal. The previous fundraising record was $23,000 raised at the 2017 Evening of Stars, when the keynote speaker was David Ross, the retired Major League Baseball catcher, who just a few months earlier had helped the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. Rodgers is a two-time NFL Most Valuable Player who has spent 13 years in the NFL, all with the Packers. It was amazing to be part of this incredible outpouring of support from the community for the Red Cross, Kevin Callis said in a statement. Callis and his wife Lisa were co-chairs at the 2018 Evening of Stars. A tremendous amount of money was raised, and it will help provide critical Red Cross services for our community, Callis said. Since the first Evening of Stars in 1994, the event has raised more than $2.5 million to support Red Cross Central Illinois services, including disaster response, preparedness training, support for military families, collection of blood and blood products, and health and safety classes. Evening of Stars is the largest Red Cross fundraiser of the year in the Bloomington Normal area. And now in other local news, this story is titled, Sale of Nestle USA Facility in Bloomington Finalized, and is written by Maria Nagel. The Nestle USA Bloomington facility is under new ownership. The plant at 2501 Beach Road has been sold to Ferrero Group's Fairvalue USA for $4 million, according to McLean County property transfer records. We sold the business at the end of March, said Roz O'Hearn, Director of Corporate and Brand Affairs for Nestle USA. The sale is part of Ferrero's purchase of Nestle's U.S. candy business for about $2.8 billion in cash. When the agreement was announced in January, O'Hearn said the Bloomington Candy Factory had 369 employees, 350 hourly, and 54 salaried. Molded chocolate and pulled sugar confections are made there and include Butterfinger, Crunch, Skinny Cow, and Laffy Taffy. A Ferrero spokeswoman Thursday declined to provide transition details, including whether there is or will be any changes to the plant's staffing levels. The Nestle USA Bloomington facility traces its roots to the Bache Candy Factory that began operations in the 1800s near the former train station on Bloomington's west side. The Bache Road facility was built in 1967, and it was acquired by Nestle in 1984. Nestle is based in Switzerland, and its candy business represented about 3% of U.S. Nestle sales. Other Nestle products include Purina, Coffee Mate, Gerber, and Stouffer's. Other brands of Italy's Ferrero include Nutella, the makers of the chocolate hazelnut spread, and Tic Tac Breath Mints. And now continuing with some news out of Chicago, our next story is titled, Chicago Officer Fatally Shoots Man Fleeing. A Chicago police officer fatally shot a 24-year-old black man, who authorities said pulled a gun while running away, prompting questions from the man's family about why the encounter turned deadly. Sergeant Rocco Eliotto said the armed confrontation Wednesday evening on the city's south side happened as officers conducted a narcotics investigation. He said the suspect fled on foot when officers approached. Eliotto said in a statement that officers told the man to stop and he produced a weapon, so the officers shot him. The man, later identified as Maurice Grant Jr., died of a gunshot wound to the back. The Cook County Medical Examiner's Office said Thursday. Police haven't said how many shots were fired by the officer. Police spokesman Anthony Guglielmi said officers involved in a narcotics investigation were watching the area Wednesday evening through one of a number of surveillance cameras mounted on poles throughout the city. They saw Granton taking part in what appeared to be an illegal drug transaction and dispatched officers to the scene. Guglielmi posted on Twitter a photograph of what he said was Granton's weapon found at the scene. He said that there was physical evidence that the gun had been fired. No officer was shot, although a sergeant may have suffered a broken ankle during the confrontation. The civilian officer of police accountability was investigating the shooting. The police department has not released the name or race of the officer involved in Wednesday night's shooting. Eliotto said the officer has been placed on 30-day administrative leave in line with the department. The shooting of Granting comes as police have faced intense scrutiny over allegations of excessive force involving black suspects. White officer Jason Van Dyke has been charged with first-degree murder in the 2014 shooting of a black teenager, Laquan McDonald. He's pleaded not guilty. Release of a video of the shooting of McDonald a year after it happened prompted outrage and calls for Mayor Rahm Emanuel to resign. Chicago police released more details of the Wednesday shooting after Granton's sister, Joanna Fernando, said that the officer had used excessive force. "Since when does running validate somebody getting shot?" she asked. The Chicago Tribune reported that Granton's family expressed doubts that the gun belonged to Granton, the father of two young daughters. "I just want to know what the real story is," Fernando said. "If it was misconduct, I want justice. My brother was 24 years old. He loved his girls. That's all he lived for, was his kids." And we have another story from the AP, this one titled, "Probe of Madigan's Office Sought." Three female Democratic state representatives are calling for an independent investigation of House Speaker Michael Madigan's office. Thursday's announcement comes a day after an employee accused Madigan's chief of staff of making lewd comments and mishandling complaints of sexual harassment. Tim Mapes resigned, making him the second top Democratic leader forced out in less than a week. Madigan said Wednesday he'd appoint an investigator to review all House operations. But Reps Kelly Burke of Oak Lawn, Ann Williams of Chicago, and Deb Conroy of Villa Park said the investigation should be independent. The representatives are part of the newly formed House Democratic Women's Caucus. They say the allegations show the culture surrounding Illinois government and politics must change. A Madigan spokesman said he couldn't comment because he hadn't seen the lawmaker's statement. Now our last story to wrap up the first half of the Pantograph News is called "Defendant to Give DNA, 18-year-old charged in double homicide." This one is written by Edith Brady Lenny. A Bloomington man charged in the shooting deaths of two men in April was ordered Thursday to provide a DNA sample to investigators as part of their investigation into the double homicide. Christopher Harrison, 18, was in court for a brief hearing with his lawyer, Michael Herzog. Judge Casey Costigan granted Assistant State's Attorney Jeff Horv's request for the suspect's DNA for forensic testing. Harrison, who was 17 at the time of the shooting, has since turned 18, is charged as an adult. He faces 6 counts of first-degree murder, 8 counts related to stolen or illegally possessed guns, and 2 counts of possession of marijuana with intent to deliver. The two victims, Joseph Gardner, 20, and Reginald Hart Jr., 19, both of Bloomington, were shot April 25th multiple times with an AR-15 rifle in a hallway of Lancaster Heights Apartments on East College Avenue in Normal. On Thursday, the judge provided the state with documents from the Illinois State Police sent in response to a subpoena for Harrison's firearm owner's identification card records. State police indicated that Harrison did not possess a FOID card required to possess weapons in Illinois, according to the records. The state recently turned over about 700 pages of documents and 20 DVDs containing evidence to the defense. An August 6th status hearing is scheduled for Harrison. Early on in the investigation, authorities said slayings may be tied to drugs, but no motive has been disclosed. A showbox containing about 190 grams of marijuana, a scale, and packaging materials were found in Harrison's bedroom in an apartment he shared with his mother. Officers also found a trash bag with a semi-automatic rifle, a 9mm handgun, and a shotgun, all allegedly stolen from their owners. According to police, Harrison told officers, "I'm not going to lie to you. I took a bag and put it in the apartment." Harrison remains in custody in lieu of $250,035 bond. That will wrap up the first half of the Pantograph News for today from the edition dated Friday, June 8th, 2018. But please stick around because we'll have more shortly. My name is Matt Woodbury, and thank you for listening.